This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm fine. Fall has come. I just want to mention that.
I wasn't sure if you were ever going to say that because you've been talking about how hot and dry it is for months. I wasn't sure if fall was actually going to get here.
I wasn't sure either, but I was counting on it. But it's in the 60s.
Wow.
You know, everybody's getting ready for the pumpkin patches. Everybody's getting ready for Halloween.
Yeah.
And I've been reading about what cities have the scariest houses.
Ooh.
I mean, people are into this.
Really?
Yes. I mean, I haven't done the research on it yet, but they tell me there is some really scary houses in different places, and they really celebrate it.
Really? So there's actually, like, locations where it's...
Oh, yes.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. I know there's one over here in East Texas, and I saw a whole lot of things about it. I haven't read it all yet. But it seems like there's three or four locations that have really scary house.
Wow. That's cool.
And so they build that up, you know, and everybody goes and looks and sees it. And, you know, it's a big deal.
Yeah. Apparently it's a bigger deal than I thought. I know we've done it for years and years for, like, you know, the biggest houses with, you know, the Christmas lights and the displays and all that. But, boy, it just maybe we're just kind of like expanding the celebration phase up a little bit earlier, and now we're starting to take it on for Halloween. That's cool.
It is cool. A lot of things happening. We've had two maturities that I want to talk about first thing.
Really?
Oh, yes, we had two maturities. One of them was in 8 months, and one of them was a year. Now, what do you think about that?
Whoa, those must have been really early.
They were really early. People made some doggone good money. The first one was Teresa Turner. We did it November the 4th of 22. It was a pancreatic cancer, and you know those are always short-term. And she died at 9/22, and that was a year. And they had said, you know, a two-year policy. They always think they're going to live 2 years, and they just don't with pancreatic cancer. So that was a short-term one because we did it November the 4th of last year. So she died 9/22, less than a year.
Wow, that's fast.
Yes. And then the other one... We did it in March the 1st of this year, and they died on 9/30.
Wow.
8 months. It was metastatic breast cancer.
Mm.
You know, I've always said these breast cancer ones will go quick, and they do. They never live as long as the life expectancy.
Jeez. You know, you,
it's just one of those things.
You do say that a lot, and there's certain ones that that I think you said that investors are more attracted to, and that's one of them for that reason.
That's exactly right. And they made 18% in 8 months.
Really?
That's not bad.
No. That's a great return.
That's pretty good. Yes, that's a good return. Both of them are. So, you know, we're doing a lot better on the LEs. They're right in line. They're coming in like they should. And people are making money, and I'm very glad about that.
And so now the plan is they can take that and then turn it around, reinvest it again, and then get some more, I guess, returns
profit.
Coming in faster. Yeah, profit.
That's exactly right, because it came in so quick. One of them is, you know, is less than a year, and one's 8 months. So, and some of the same people I looked at were in both policies.
Really?
Yeah. One guy had 60-something thousand in one, 60-something thousand in the other one. So he had some good returns.
Wow.
He made 18% on one, 9% on the other one.
That's a good
chunk
of change.
That's a pretty good return.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. Yeah, the ones that were in both policies did very well. And then I had one policy that's not even on this, same person, and she was in the policy by herself, and she got $120,000 back.
Really?
Yes, she did very well.
That's a great return.
She was the only person in that one policy. And and then she was in one of the others. She was in two. I didn't even realize it. Yes. She was in two different policies. She got $120,000 back on one and $60,000 on the other. So that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it is. Are there many policies? Because I don't think I hear you talking about very many, very often, where there's only one person in them. Is that, that's not normal, is it?
Every once in a while, we'll have a policy that maybe $100,000 or $150,000, and somebody will say, Faye, can I take the whole thing? And okay. So we'll let them on a small policy.
All right. Cause
I've got several people that do that.
Is there a number, and I don't even know if this is even a real question or not, but is there an average number of investors that will get into a policy, or does it kind of vary based on how much the policy is or how much people want to put in?
It depends if they like it. If they like it, they may want to put more than what we want them to put in, or they may stick with the script and put just exactly what we asked for. It depends how they feel about the policy.
I don't know how to ask this. If you had, there's got to be a threshold someplace. So say you had maybe a $500,000 policy, and you sent it out, and you sent it out to, I'm just making up numbers here, sent it out to like 15 or 20 people, and then I sent you something back and say, Faye, I wanted in the whole thing. Would something like that even be possible, or is that just
how much was the face amount?
$500,000.
No, we would not do that. No.
Okay. And that is so that, I guess I should probably ask. I shouldn't assume.
I want them to be more diversified than that.
I got you.
I don't want them to have a $500,000 investment.
Okay, so that's just too top-heavy for one person.
That is too top-heavy. $100,000 or $150,000 would be plenty.
Okay.
I wouldn't recommend any more than that.
All right. Well, cool. I know you have a lot of things that you juggle when you're looking at policies and deciding how many people to put it in, deciding who to put into a policy and things like that. The type of policy it is all goes into this whole thing. And so, the formula of all the things that you're juggling, I wasn't sure if there's certain parameters that are predefined, or if there's like hard threshold numbers for things like that, or just really sort of depends. But there are some general limits that maybe.
Yes, there is. There's some general limits. We like for everybody to be diversified. We like to have a lot of people in a policy rather than just a few. We're bidding on a big policy now that is $5 million. And it'll take a lot of people to fill it. And we've got our bids in. We don't know if we'll win it or not. But I think we bid 60% of face value.
Wow. All right.
And that way the clients will make 35%.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. So, and it's got very low premiums. It'll be a good policy if we get it.
Just running some rant, and I know you don't have it yet, so you haven't worked out all the math and the particulars, but for like a $5 million policy, how many people on average would you try to fill it with or put into
it? I'd say it's going to take 35.
Okay. All right.
Probably. Yeah, about 35.
I mean, it's a pretty huge, that's a big policy. So,
that's
like.
That's right. It's a big policy. It'll take at least 2 weeks to fill it.
Oh, wow.
And, we've got some other $5 million ones. The TAN policy was $2 million, that just came in. And a lot of people made a lot of money on the TAN policy because they paid so much interest. Hmm. They not only paid the regular amount, but then they gave us interest from the day we turned in the claim till it was paid. So that was another $259,000.
Jeez.
We've never gotten one that big, I don't think, in interest. So somebody mentioned that to me this week. Said, Faye, I made more than that on that one than I have on anything I've ever done. And I think that's probably true. There was a lot of profit in the TAN policy.
Interest is an extra thing that they pay out on top of the actual policy itself.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
In other words, different companies pay different amounts. It can range from 2% to 6%. And it's however long it takes to get paid. So really, there shouldn't be a hurry on getting that death certificate in, because they will pay you interest until they write that check.
So the longer the certificate it takes to get the certificate back, the more the interest builds up, which means the more profit
people
make.
That's right, yes.
Cool.
Because you're already making interest at the regular rate, and you know what you're going to get out of it. But then they tack that extra interest on, which is always a surprise.
So when you say that people are going to make more than what they actually think or what you tell them, that's because, say, you have an 18-month policy, and you know whenever it comes in, that 18% that they're going to make is just based on the policy, does not include the extra interest that might
on
top of it.
No, it does not.
Cool.
And some of them don't pay very good on interest, but some of them pay really well.
Nice.
Some of them, after you know knowing what your profit is, they may only pay 1% a month. But some of them, if you went back over all the years, we've collected a lot of extra interest.
Cool. How long is there a time period for when interest begins?
Yes, when you notify them of the death.
Okay. So if it took like a month, there would be a certain amount. If it was like 3 days or 5 days or something like that, it would be
you
less.
You wouldn't get much, yeah.
Okay.
If you and we've never had one pay that quick.
Yeah, that would be awfully
three,
fast.
3 5 days would be extraordinary. I mean, it's like all the ones we've had to go help them find the people, you know. The one that we found in Killeen, Texas. You know, she lived in Houston, but she died in Killeen, and nobody could find her. But we found her in about 15 minutes. You know, we did some research, we found her. You know, we told them, here's where you can find her, get the death certificate. And then if you remember last year, I found two here in Texas that people couldn't find. And I got the death certificate sent up. And, you know, it wasn't hard. They just said, you know, tell us where to send it. And one of them, we had to pay the court, you know, for it. The other one, we didn't. They just sent it to us.
Is it that people are just lazy, or do you have, like, special powers and special...
Oh, yes, you have to have everything. They won't send you a death certificate unless you can prove that you have an interest in the policy.
Hmm. They don't just send it out to random people.
No, they will not. And some places are really strange about it, and others it's real easy. You tell them, you know, that we have bought the policy, we're now the beneficiary, and they'll send it. And we just send them a copy of something. Then some of them want a lot of documentation. So it depends who it is.
Hmm.
And most of them are easy to work with, except in New Jersey. And it's like pulling teeth. I don't think they go to work but one day a week. I think they stay home the rest of the week. Oh, my gosh.
They're always on vacation.
That's right. And if you remember during the pandemic, it was they really were closed a lot of the time. They just didn't even go in. They didn't even bother. And, you know, we're trying to get something done, and they had a recording of them during the pandemic saying, I'm sorry, we're not in today.
Wow. And that went on for
And
for
they weren't
months.
In the next day, in the next day. Oh, my gosh, it was hard.
Wow. Goodness gracious.
But, other places are, you know, very nice and easy to work with, and usually they don't take a long time to get your death certificate out where you can get your claim filed. Hmm. And you can actually file the claim before you get the death certificate.
Can you really?
You can do that. Yeah, you can do that because they have a website. You can go on their website and actually do that.
Go
site and fill out your claim, And it says other documents needed, of course, is a certified death certificate. So, you know, that comes later.
Is there?
But at least they know you've got a claim against them. They know what policy. They know what day they died. So they've already got that.
So they can kind of get some things maybe rolling ahead of time, I guess.
That's early. Right. They can get on that part.
Is there ever a place where you say, you know, we could pursue to try to get this one wrapped up, but maybe we'll let it go another month or two just to get more interest? I know
no,
people want to get paid.
Never
and hurt.
Do that.
I didn't know if that was even possible.
No, we don't. We just start out and do it the normal way.
And then whatever happens, you know, happens.
Because it takes long enough the way it is, you know. So I'm always saying, you know, let's hurry. And sometimes hurrying and not hurrying. But then sometimes we've had cases where it paid right away. You know, when we had that large one several months ago. And they paid it like a slot machine. Paid off fast, didn't have any trouble. But a lot of them just sat there and hold the money. And it's costing them money. You know, they're paying us interest when they do that. So it doesn't hurt us, but it's an aggravation sometimes.
Yeah. And it's in your best interest and investors, I'm sure, to get it in as quick as possible so you can turn that around, get it into other policies, and keep the whole diversification strategy going, right?
That's exactly right.
All right.
Because we know as soon as we get that in, the money goes in their accounts, they can reinvest.
Yeah. Which is really how it works best for life settlements. You know, the more people or the more policies that people are in, the more profit they're making, because there's always something that's turning over. And so you don't want to delay
that
process at all.
And we've had an awful lot of policies mature this year. You know, we've had, I can't even remember how many million it is.
Mm. How is this year pace? And you may not have run the numbers yet, so I probably shouldn't even be asking. Since we are into like fourth quarter, how is this year pacing compared to previous years? Because it's been kind of such a strange year.
It's a lot better than last year. Last year was slim. The first half of this year, we had already done as much as we did all year last year.
Wow!
So it's come a long way. We're fighting for policies right now. We're having to bid them hard. There's a limited amount out there. Usually we're getting 4 to 5 policies a week. We're not getting that many right now. Then they're sending their old dregs, you know, the ones that nobody's going to buy, but they're sending them out anyway. So that's happening. And then, you know, just all of a sudden this week, we get the $5 million one that we're bidding on, we hope to get, because we can put a lot of people in it. And turn their money.
So when they send you quote-unquote junk policies that you would never bid on, how much time do you actually invest in looking at those before you realize this is nonsense? Are you like hours into it? And then it's...
No, about 5 minutes.
Okay.
First you read the age. And when you see the age, that tells you the whole story.
Yeah.
So you send it back and say, you know, we don't do 80-year-olds. We don't do 85-year-olds. You know, and the premium is just out of this world. So we would never get involved. But they send it out anyway, and then we're saying, no, we're not interested. You know, and then they'll send some that I can tell you they're not ill. Mm. And we send it back and say, this person is not ill enough for us to be bidding on. You know.
So right now,
we need one that's really sick.
You're kind of in this phase where you're doing a whole lot of sifting, filtering.
Yes, we filter this because if they send us 5 policies and they're all, you know, in the 80s, we've wasted a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm glad it only takes a couple minutes to determine. I would hate for you to be like 5 hours into a policy and then look at something and say, this is terrible. We're not going to bid on this. That's a lot of time to invest. So I'm glad you can at least tell fairly quickly to make a determination. So
that's right, because it doesn't take long. The premium is the first thing to look at besides their age. You look at the age and then the premium is next. And when it says 6 and 7%, you just throw up your hands and throw it out the window and say, oh, my gosh, there isn't anybody going to buy a policy that's 6 or 7%, I can tell you.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you're going for what, less than 2 or ideally less than 1?
Yes. I love it when it's less than 1. It's really a great deal.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, what about annuities? How are they doing? Are we still in bonus?
We're still getting the bonus. We're still getting the extra money. I had a client call this week. He said, Faye, I'm retiring. I'm 73. I think I want to do an annuity. And so we're talking to him about an annuity. We don't know how many years he wants, but if you're retiring, you should probably get a 10-year annuity because you're going to live 10 years, and you can take 10% a year out. It's all compound interest. It doesn't go through probate. There's just not anything bad about an annuity, as long as you don't get one that has mutual funds in it. These annuities never go down. Your principal's always safe. Your interest is locked in once a year. There's no taxes till you take it out. So I there's not anything negative about an annuity. You can have as many beneficiaries as you want. I have a lot of people that have maybe one child that they don't want to be in charge of any of their money. That's when they take out an annuity, because the annuity will make sure they don't get it. If you want it paid out with your wishes, then you do an annuity and put one of the other children over it, and then that child only gets it when the trustee wants them to have it. Because we have a lot of people, they'll have one child that's immature, that's crazy, that's done a lot of stuff, and they don't want them to be in charge of their money. So an annuity works very well for that.
So they could, like, say something like they cannot have access until they're 35 years old or something like that. Is that
what?
That's
right. Okay. You can put a lot of restrictions. And if that isn't good enough, you think they're going to sue your estate or something, you can put it in a trust. You can put the annuity in a trust. But it's not necessary. Just put the right beneficiaries on it and you're home free. You've got it covered. You can get a lump sum when you die. Or they can take a payout for years to come, and it's not going to run out. You know, you can take so much a month the rest of your life. And so annuity is one of the safest things. Remember, we've still got the 12% bonus. You can get that 12% added on up front, plus your interest every year. Then if you put more money in it every year, you can get another 12%. So it depends. You know, if you're going to put a lump sum in, if you're going to put money in every year, it's going to depend how old you are, whether you're going to start drawing on it next year or if it's going to be 3 years or 5 years. You know, we don't know your circumstance. That's why we have to meet with you and figure all this out for you.
So literally, it depends on where people are in their, I guess their not only
their
life
planning. Yes.
Yeah, but
if they're going to retire next year, are they going to retire 5 years from now? That money can really grow, compounded. If you're not going to take anything out for 5 years, it will really grow in that length of time.
And it doesn't take a whole lot of engagement, interaction, a lot of action on anybody's part. You literally, for an annuity, just set it and forget it, right?
That's right. And then once a year, we look at it when it comes due and say, okay, this part made more money, this part didn't, and we can change it every year. But every time you make interest during the year, it locks it in at the end of the year. It's never directly in the stock market. It mirrors the stock market, but it is not in the stock market. It's just on the sidelines.
Because these are fixed annuities. These are not variable.
They're not variable annuities. A variable annuity's got all kinds of mutual funds. When the fund goes down, your annuity goes down. When you have a fixed index annuity, they never go down. It might have a bad year, but you won't lose any money, and your principal never goes down.
So they have, I guess you could we, is it fair to characterize it as though these have a safety net?
Yes, there is a safety net, because if you were in the stock market and it went down, you lose the money.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, your account goes right down the path, but this, it never loses money. It might have a year when it didn't make any money, but it won't ever lose any money.
Yeah, and the annuities are really hot.
Because your principal is sitting there.
Yeah.
So the principal doesn't ever go down.
These things are a hot thing right now. Have they always? Annuities have always been a good, solid foundation, but have they? Has there been this kind of excitement before, or is it because of the bonuses?
No, not in several years. Used to, annuities, you know, were doing very, very well. And then they kind of just, you know, were plateauing. So now, there's lots and lots of people buying for their estate.
Do we know how long the bonus things are going to go on? Or
no, it's still going, so we're excited about that.
And that's all we know. It could end on Tuesday. It may end on Halloween. You never know.
That's but... right. And we just love it, you know. We love the fact that it's making money. 10% is an average. We did a 10-year study. It has averaged that.
Has the bonus and thing with annuities and the new rejuvenated excitement in annuities, has this kind of changed some people's investment strategy? So say, I would imagine you probably got some people who have been in life settlements for a long time, and that's really kind of been their main focus. Has the annuity shift kind of like revisited that and kind of had them say, you know, let me move some over to annuities in addition? Has that changed anything, or...
I think it's changed a lot, because people are seeing annuity as a safety valve, as a good, safe investment when you get older. The gentleman this week told me he did not want to go back in the stock market. He said, I'm 73 years old. I'm fixing to retire. I want my money to be safe, but yet make some money. So that's why he's doing annuities. Everybody that does an annuity is looking for a safety net. They're looking for something that won't surprise them and go down in the middle of their retirement and ruin them. And they know that the risk of the stock market is just too great if you're 70 years old.
So, okay.
You know, if you're 50, you could recoup.
Yeah.
But if you're 70, how in the heck are you going to recoup when you're fixing to retire?
Yeah, there's just not enough time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not enough time.
So now we've got it all set up. Now I'm going to swing for the fence. Annuities and life settlements both are conservative investments that are protected from things like the stock market. I saw a couple of articles this week that talked about how consumer confidence is at an insanely low rate. You know, there was a bunch of different things that are weighing on consumers' minds. You've got the looming government shutdown from a couple weeks ago. You've got all kinds of, you know, political
problem
things.
Problem with Congress.
Yeah, problems with Congress. You've got now the thing with war overseas. And so it's from everything that I've read, consumer spending is, I don't want to say it's coming to a halt, but it is really kind of turning things down for the first time in almost a decade. Is this setting things up for people to, let me see, let me ask it a different way. Knowing that this kind of volatility and this instability and lack of confidence in any kind of market anywhere, is this a good time to be in life settlements and or annuities because of the world situations? And each are independent.
I think so. All right. You know, things could get really rough. Inflation's bad. We've got the war over there. People are worried about that. They're worried about the election. They say when people go to the grocery store, they can tell a big difference. And that's how they measure it. It's what people spend. And that tells you the story. And they've really cut back. They said the grocery bills are way back from what they were a year ago. People are worried. They're worried about stability right now. And if they're doing all these crazy things, investing in crazy things, they're going to get hurt. Let me tell you the information I know. I've talked to people that have people involved in commercial real estate in Dallas. These buildings are half empty.
Jeez.
I'm telling you. One said they had 35,000 feet with nobody in it.
Really?
I've talked to others that they've got huge amounts, and they're just sitting there. And what do they think? They're not reducing the rent. I don't know if the lenders have already taken them over, and that's why they won't reduce the rent, or if they're about to take them over. But there is thousands of square feet in Dallas, Texas, that are not rented. How do you pay those mortgages?
So what are they doing?
I can't figure it out.
Are they converting?
I can't figure it out. If the lenders already have them, if they're fixing to have them. But this is going to hurt the economy a lot. Is your commercial real estate is in bad, bad trouble.
What about average consumer? I don't know. I don't want to focus just on consumer spending, but how will it affect average consumers? We know grocery prices, like you were talking about, you know, are you know, crazy gas prices. You got all these different factors, and then you've got the holidays that are coming up because you know you've already started to see some of the holiday deals. You got the Amazon deal. I think Walmart did a kind of like a Amazon type of deal for a couple of days. Next month is Thanksgiving, which means you get into like Black Friday sales and things like that. So the holidays are like at the doorstep. Are you hearing anything? Do you think anything? Do you have any insight as to how things might go in the next couple of months because of that and the situation?
I think that the stock market could get really rough. I really do. And because of it is the uncertainty in the world. Remember, the stock market is a barometer. Because so many people have their 401ks in it, and they cannot take those out. That's whatever happens, it's there. So you've got some huge market volatility, and it's affected by things that are happening in the world, in other countries, what's happening here. We have a lot of instability. Things are just not stable, and they were a little bit ago. And you know, I've told you that a lot of the big builders have sold the lots off that they've got.
Yeah.
They said, we just can't sell enough houses to justify all these lots we're setting up. So they've sold thousands of lots. And then, like in San Francisco, which is kind of like Portland, you know, they stopped that big building they were building. They couldn't even fill it. That's a commercial project that didn't even get even finished. It's just sitting there. And you've got a lot of things like downtown San Francisco's almost gone. And you know, that hotel, they gave it back to the lender. They've given some other real estate back to the lender. And this affects all your interest rates. And you know, we had those few banks earlier that they went under. So things are not as stable as I would like for them to be.
Yeah. And then, you know, you've obviously got student loan repayments that are starting back. You've got interest rates that are going back up. And then all these real estate, we're talking about massive losses for these, you know, for these developers that are just, you know, they bought all these things when things were thriving. And now all it's just, they're just, like you said, sitting there empty.
So my thing is to be safe. Always be safe. Guard your money, because remember, this is all you've got is your retirement. Your retirement is a big thing. When you get ready for it, if you don't have it, or if it's way down in value, it's going to hurt you for years to come. But if you're on a trajectory where your money is locked in, it's safe, it can't disappear, you're going to be all right. It won't matter to you if the stock market's up or down. Your money's safe. You don't want to have it in something wild that could go wrong. And a life settlement is a life insurance, folks. You're buying a life insurance interest from some of the biggest life insurance companies on planet Earth. So that's a good investment. They're dying of cancer. You know, that's all we do is cancer. We've done a couple other things over the years, but mainly it's cancer that we know will come due, We've got good LEs on everything. The profit is there. So that would be, you know, your number one choice. If you want to really be conservative, you do part of it in annuities. And if you're 70 or above, you might want to do it all in annuities. Because annuities, life insurance companies have got more money than anybody on earth. They've got more than the banks, I can tell you. And they don't make loans. So they don't have loan exposure. These banks have got a tremendous loan exposure right now on commercial real estate. And they're going to have to eat a lot of this. And when they do, they're going to have to put up more capital. So, you know, that's always something to think about. Be conservative. Don't do anything foolish or wild investments that you don't know anything about. So it's been around over 100 years.
Those that are skeptical and unsure about really spending anything, these are both, either way, annuities or life settlements are both still thriving right now. And you've seen this for the last couple. In fact, I think we've even talked about it a time or two that, you know, over the last couple of years with all the weirdness, you know, and the COVID and things, you know, shutting down and businesses that have been around for hundreds of years going out of business and all the weirdness that's happened throughout the whole process, we've seen a number of different situations that have really tanked a lot of businesses and retailers. But regardless of the situation, annuities and life settlements have thrived through all of it because they are not, like you said, they're not in, they're not like a bank, they're not like in the stock market, they're their own entity, and so they're really essentially shielded from any kind of worldly factors, right?
And they have reserves on top of reserves.
Oh, yes, that too.
And that banks don't have. I mean, so your money is always safe in an annuity. Remember, the companies that we use, my favorite one, is worth $60 billion.
Wow.
Now, you count $60 billion on a table, and it'll floor you how much $60 billion is. And they're A-rated. They're A-plus rated, just like we are. We're A-plus rated. We've been in business 23 years.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And that's kind of a long time.
Yeah, it is. That is great. That's good to know. Did I tell you the other day that I saw an ad for a new bank, like a brand new bank?
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Wow.
You got to be kidding me.
That's what we really need right now is a new bank with no track record.
None. Woo! None whatsoever. I was like,
I hope they aren't loaning money out because that's what will ruin you right now.
I know.
You know, you loan out all this money, and then you get audited.
Yeah.
That's the first thing the auditors do. They check every loan you've got.
Yeah.
I remember when the crisis in the real estate years ago, they were just throwing out loans left and right. And I knew some doctors. And the president of the bank was a friend of mine. He said, you're not going to believe this. He said, they've called the loan on this doctor. I said, what did he do? Nothing. He said, he's got all these warehouses that we loaned him money to build. And he said, they've called his loan. He said, how's a doctor going to pay all that money back at one time?
Wow.
You know?
Jeez.
And they were just calling people's loans. And they can do that. If they decide you're a bad risk, they tell the bank, you get rid of that loan. You call it, you get that money back in.
Wow, immediately.
And then if you can't, then it goes against the bank. I mean, it's just it's a bad deal.
Yeah, it's almost like a domino effect.
It is. So, you know, they have to screen every borrower a lot more than they used to. And now if a borrower goes under, the reserves are coming right up. You've got to cover it.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting there with some real estate you don't want.
Yeah.
It looked good on the surface. It looked good when you loaned the money. But now it's went belly up. What are you going to do?
Yeah. You're kind of stuck with a dud.
Yeah. And the board of directors is liable.
Mm-mm.
You have a lot of liability if you're on the board of a bank. I mean, it used to be really prestigious. I would not want to be on the board of a bank and be liable. Your liability insurance is really high.
Well, I bet they don't get much sleep at night either.
That's right. When the president of the bank tells you, well, you know, we've got four bad loans.
Oh, boy.
And none of them can pay. and you're starting to pull your hair.
Yep.
And they say, is the collateral worth more than the loan? Well, no. Collaterals went down too.
Oh,
and then
my.
You just pull the rest of your hair out.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my gosh.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. Did you know, I think that's the first time we've given out the phone number.
I think it is. It didn't
it
sound
just
familiar.
It dawned on me. We haven't even been giving out the phone number. What's wrong with us?
We got all excited about everything else and forgot.
Well, I got excited about those two policies that had just matured.
Yeah.
You know?
And then we were off and running. It's...
That's right. We were just telling the story like it is and just completely forgot.
Yeah. Well, there are people that you've said that think that all this is all like scripted out and planned ahead of time. It's all completely, we wing it as we go. So sometimes
right.
We'll forget
if
the phone.
If we was to script it, we wouldn't know how to act.
I know it.
Because we'd change our mind right in the middle of that script.
We would. That would be a disaster.
I mean, it would be. It wouldn't work with us.
No. It might be entertaining to watch a train wreck, but it would be a disaster.
That's right. You don't want to be a part of the train wreck.
No. So every Saturday around this time, we take a break. We talk about trivia. So what is our topic today?
It's a very interesting story. It's the story of Benny Keith. Do you remember seeing the big trucks going up and down the highway? Benny Keith Distributing Company?
Yes.
Okay, this is the story of the Benny Keith Trucking Company. They started in Fort Worth, Texas. And I had never heard this story, and I love it. It's one of my favorites now that I've read it. Ben Keith was born in Fort Worth in 1882.
Whoa.
The company was founded in Fort Worth in 1906. And it started out as a produce house. Now, I knew that they delivered to all the grocery stores. They're a wholesaler. But I never did know how it started or how it went. And it started out as Harkrider Morrison Company. Now, Ben Keith left school when he was 14, and he was driving a coal wagon to help out his family. So he later attended business college and got an accounting degree. In 1909, he became the first salesman for Harkrider Morrison, and they were just targeting small grocery stores, but they received shipments of fresh fruits and vegetables from the West Coast and from South Texas. And that this is when the trains came along. So the train cars would transport all this fruit up to Dallas, Fort Worth. And they used ice all along the way to keep it together. And the mix was simple. It was lettuce, onions, potatoes, apples, citrus. And they also carried dried fruit, which was real popular back then. Refrigeration was non-existent, let's face it. So each day, the young Ben Keith, he would visit all of his customers, take their produce orders. He would return to the warehouse. He'd load a little wagon, and he made his deliveries. Hmm. And he'd load up extras for whatever he thought he might could sell. And he'd go out and sell this stuff, get the cash, bring it back to the company. He was their first salesman, and he was their best salesman. And during this period of horse and mule-drawn wagons, deliveries outside of Fort Worth were really hard to do because we didn't have paved roads back then. They were muddy. So deliveries to outlying towns were delivered the next day using Railway Express.
Wow.
So to improve this, they began opening branch offices. The first branch office was in Wichita Falls, called Wichita Falls Fruit and Vegetable Company. So that was in 1910.
Really?
So 2 years later, they said, well, let's open another one. And it was established in Fort Worth, close to downtown. Well, then they said, West Texas, we need one in West Texas. So in 1914, they opened a branch in Abilene called Abilene Fruit and Vegetable Company. Well, Bill and Keith, even though he was just a young guy, made himself an important part of this business. So in 1911, when the company changed its name to Harkender, Keith and Cookie Company, and he became a vice president, a treasurer, and then in 1918, he bought controlling interest when the owners dropped out.
Really?
He then became president and general manager. But he kept the name of the firm. It did not become Benny Keith until 1931. So then in 1920, he opened one in Lubbock, Texas.
Hmm.
So this way he's got places, four or five places around to deliver the fruits and vegetables. So in 1920, he became involved in the gift business. And again, Amon Carter, Fort Worth, who was one of the smartest men we've ever done a story on. And he called him. He said, look, I'd like to package some grapefruit and send it to some friends in New York City. Well, the idea proved very good. So the next couple of years, Keith shipped grapefruit packages. And then in 1929, he produced a crude gift catalog. It was just a mammograph.
Wow.
And he was showing them, you know, what all he could sell you, and the fruits and all this. And, of course, these baskets were made in Mexico, shipped around the country. And then Amon Carter said, look, this isn't even professional looking. So in the 1940s, he finally printed a catalog. And it showed ham and turkey and fruitcake. Well, it grew by word of mouth. And so then, by 1990, he had a mailing list of 100,000 people.
Wow.
In his gourmet catalog.
Wow, 100,000.
And so he is making $2 million a year through the catalog. I mean, you know, and so then he discontinued it. So then he said, well, I want to do some other things. So in 1928, he paid a personal visit to Adolphus Bush in St. Louis. And he said, I want to secure the Texas distributorship for Anheuser-Busch. And then, of course, Prohibition came a few years later and temporarily put the beer business out of business. But he was selling ice cream syrup, soft drink flavoring, and near beer with a little bit of alcohol in it. Anheuser-Busch offered baker's yeast and malt syrup. And they said, now be sure to warn people about the danger of allowing the yeast to mix with the malt syrup and water. Said, you're going to have a disposable batch of beer here, and you're going to have a problem. Prohibition ended in 1933. So Anheuser-Busch returned to beer brewing, and Ben Keith was well-positioned. He took advantage of it. Not only did he have the Anheuser-Busch franchise, he had the refrigeration from his produce to store the unpasteurized draft beer. It had to be stored below 40 degrees. So in the 1930s, he started using the slogan, fresh from Keith's. And then he made some posters to put up. So he was, by this time, in the food service business all the way. So during this time, frozen storage and delivery technology, you know, became popular. But then we had World War II hit him. So some of his equipment was commandeered for the war effort. When the war was over in 45, he started investing in the first Birdseye distributorship.
Really?
I didn't even know Birdseye went back to 1945.
Me either.
Yeah. So he bought one of the first franchises in Birdseye. Now, this man died in 1959. He left a thriving business, but a lot of personal accomplishments. He helped establish three Texas universities. He was involved in the founding of the three Fort Worth area military bases during World War I. Carswell Air Force Base was due to him. He organized the first modern citrus plant in the valley. He was the founder of the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce and served as its president. Now, he died, but other people took over. They became as famous as him. But what do you think Benny Keith makes per year?
Oh, my God. I don't even know.
$6 billion a year.
Oh, wow.
$6 billion, folks. It started in Fort Worth. with a kid, you know, started in the business at 14, become their salesman. Two or three years later, he became president when these other guys wanted to drop out.
Jeez.
And they've got 6,000 employees.
Wow.
They own the biggest Anheuser-Busch distributorship in the United States and most of the world.
Do they really?
They really do. It's just amazing, the story of what all this guy accomplished, the universities he got started, all the different things that he started.
It's kind of brilliant for him to like think about opening the branch offices, too. I was really impressed with that. I don't know if he was like the first
to do that or not.
But
he's the first one because there wasn't anybody else out there. And he went to each place and started a branch where they didn't have to travel so far to do this. He sells 35 million cases a year of Anheuser-Busch.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he serves 60 Texas counties.
Good Lord. I'm shocked because there's one thing that's consistent with all the stories that you tell is how people, you know, have this great idea for something. And then over time, it morphs into something else. And by the time the thing that they're most known for is not what they started with. And so it's fascinating how, you know, these people like this, they take an idea and then build on it and change it and make partnerships and build on it and change it and make more partnerships. And then it's fascinating how these things morph and change like that.
And can you imagine he had mules and these old wagons? And he'd fill them up with the produce, go out all day, take orders, sell, and come back, and the next day he'd do it again. He was 14 when he started.
Wow.
And had no education. Then later, after he'd done all this other, he got a degree in accounting, I guess just to help with the numbers. But like you said, he went to all these different places in Texas and established a place that they could ship to.
Yeah.
And so it helped them grow a lot faster than just working with a wagon and a team here in Dallas.
Yeah. Jeez. I mean,
I can't believe all he did. He, did so many good things.
Me too. I can't believe it either. I didn't even realize Birdseye went back that far either.
I did not know that Birdseye was starting and was here in 1945. And he got a franchise. I can't believe that. I mean, I don't know anything about his personal life, but business-wise, he was a genius.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, is really inspiring. And, of course, again, you know, from Texas, so what do you expect? You know, it's almost like a given.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if a guy can turn a wagon and mules into $6 billion a year, folks. I mean, yeah. There's hope for us. I mean, you know, we might make it yet.
Yeah, I was impressed with $2 million just from the catalog. I was ready to stop there.
$2 million. And Eamon Carter told him, he said, this mammograph catalog looks really bad. He said, can't you fix it and do something? And he waited till 1945 or 1940 to do a real catalog, you know?
Yeah.
And he just mimeographed and had pictures on it, showed fruit on it. That was it. It was black and white. But if Carter hadn't ordered those fruits, those grapefruits to go to New York, he would never made that extra $2 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what that one trigger event, you know, kicked off this whole other thing. And it's just fascinating how much not only just how much money he made, but how entrepreneurial he was in his thinking. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And how many people would have said, you know, a beer distributorship might go well in Texas. And it goes all the way to St. Louis, meets Adolphus there and says, will you get me a franchise? Yeah, I'll give you a franchise. And he went through World War II. He did so many things, but he made a comeback each time.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the biggest distributor of Anheuser-Busch in the United States, and they said probably the world.
Jeez.
That's 33 million.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Wow.
And, yeah, everything he did, turned to gold. And remember, when he was sending everything on the railroad, they were having to ice the fruit every little bit.
Yeah.
Because there was no refrigeration.
Yeah, and they did the dehydrated fruit as well, because same reason, no refrigeration. So.
Yeah, no refrigeration. And it's just amazing how he used his brain on each step of the way to make money.
Fascinating.
You know?
It really is fascinating. It's a great story.
I think he was a great guy.
Yeah. Like you said, genius. Absolutely.
He was a genius. For his time, he was a genius. Oh. And then to start the universities that. And then all the air bases at Fort Worth. Look what he did about that.
Oh, yeah.
He got all those.
Jeez.
And so that really helped our country, too.
It's just the list of different things is so, and it's not all one. They're all like these different, you know, things that are not necessarily connected, but they are all connected. So it's fascinating. It really is.
The other thing is those two guys dropped out. That he would have never been that successful if he'd had to share.
That's having the smarts to keep going.
That's right. I mean, they say, well, we won't drop. Oh, good. I mean, here, I'll take over.
Yeah. I'll take it here, please. Go on. You go about your happy way. I'll keep it going. I bet they're probably at some point looked back and kicked themselves and said, you know, that wasn't.
I imagine they did. Said, you know, we were really dumb.
Yeah.
And he was smarter than all three of us.
Yeah. Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
All right, before we wrap up, we should probably run over the risks with life settlements. There are two. What is the biggest?
The biggest risk is it can go over and you would have to pay premium. So that is the biggest risk. We try to have the risk as low as possible. And every time you do a contract, you know what the risk is going in. We always show you what the, if it went over, what the premium would be up front. So you always know all the facts. It tells you everything about the policy on one sheet. It used to be page 14. We think it's five sheets from the end now. But everything is on there to tell you what the risks are. The second risk is, remember, it is not liquid till it matures. When it matures, it is then liquid. And then you can turn around and spend it or reinvest.
And one does need to be accredited to do a life settlement. So what does that mean?
You must be accredited. You must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million without your home. That is a federal regulation.
Any accreditation to do an annuity or kind of?
No, but you have to have good monthly income. You can't be overloading with debt. And you have to have a sufficient amount in your bank account or your savings account to pay your bills.
All right. So no hard numbers, but they are going to cut. It's kind of like taking out a loan. They are going to look at, you know, your
assets. That's right. And if they look and say, this person makes $1,500 a month, they're spending $2,000, that won't get it.
Yeah, no, that won't
work.
They
want to see somebody that's got $10,000 in the bank or $100,000 or, you know, that's got a big IRA or a 401k. You know, most of the people that do this have several hundred thousand in an IRA or a 401k.
All right. And you are open for business as usual this coming week. No major holidays or anything like that, I would assume. You are
taking appointments. That's right. We have no holidays this week. So it's work, work, work.
So for people to call you, reach out, get started, get some more information, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold. This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.